Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. It's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokat. Thanks for tuning into our award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, if you didn't know it, today marks the first day of Fire Prevention Week across the nation, so we're going to dial up an educator from the National Fire Protection Association to get some potentially life-saving tips and important reminders about how to keep yourself, your family, and your property safe from fire. Then we'll meet the founder of Sustain.com and learn about the first ever Sustainable Living Expo coming to Norwalk's Stepping Stones Museum for Children on Saturday, October 13th. You'll get clued in on why you should bring all your old textile items from home for recycling and about exhibitors that range from folks bringing in electric vehicles to local farmers. And then we're going to close replaying a chat with one of the authors of a nationwide study on STEM education and why some parts of the country, including Connecticut, are doing better than others in motivating or inspiring students to pursue careers in science, technology, engineering, and math. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokat, right after this musical reminder. Congregation Adeth Israel of Newtown is hosting another Tequila Sunrise on Saturday, October 13th at 7:30 p.m. at Massac High School on Monroe Turnpike in Monroe. In addition to bringing you an evening of your favorite Eagles hits, there's going to be a bake sale and a silent auction showcasing a wide array of goods from area retailers and services from restaurants, popular sporting events, and golf opportunities. Don't miss the band that Rolling Stone magazine calls the best Eagles tribute band on earth. Advance tickets are $35 for adults and $25 for seniors, or get them for $40 at the door and $30 for seniors and students. And if you want to get those advance tickets, you can call 203-426-5188. That's 203-426-5188. All right. Well, here we are, the first show of October, and on a really great day because today, October 7th and through the 13th, is National Fire Prevention Week. And in addition to the all-important look, listen, and learn essential steps that everybody needs to adopt, there are other important safety tips that everybody should know to prevent tragedy. And, of course, these tips are for every day, not just during Fire Prevention Week. And if we got the right person to clue us in on ways to stay safer and protect our homes and our loved ones and ourselves from fire, we're talking with Susan McKelvey of the National Fire Protection Association. And it's great to have you, Susan. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's get right in here and start talking about the theme of the week. Be aware, fire can happen. Fire can happen anywhere. Why was this the theme that rose above all to kind of be the watch phrase for this year's Fire Prevention Week?
Yeah. So first of all, we wanted people to have an awareness that fires can still happen. They do happen every day. This is particularly important at home because home is the place that people are greatest risk to fire, but it's actually the place they think they're safest. So we really wanted to drive the point home that fires can and do happen. Be aware of them. Look around your home. Be aware of signs. Know things you can do to take the steps to first prevent fires from happening in the first place. But if there is a fire, make sure that you're prepared.
Very good. When it comes to preparation, I know that folks who have been on our program before talking about fire safety, they continue to stress, and I continue to be shocked at households that still do not utilize or correctly utilize smoke alarms and fire extinguishers. Although one is probably much more important than the other, in the grand scale of things, those are pretty much the two components that really elevate your chance for surviving a fire of any size in your home, right?
Well, So smoke alarms are your first line of defense in a fire because they alert you in time to escape safely. And they're so critically important now because we know that fires today burn faster than they used to for several reasons. So when the smoke alarm sounds, you may have as little as 2 to 3 minutes to escape safely. So A, you've got to have those smoke alarms in the right places in your home and make sure they're in working order. But then you have to know how to use that time wisely. And that takes advanced planning and practice. So really, home escape planning and practice are really another critical factor in being prepared because you have to make sure that you and everyone in your home can snap into action when the smoke alarm sounds, that you don't lose that precious time in making missteps that can really, you know, minimize your ability to get out safely. So those are the two key things that we like to focus on. Fire extinguishers can be good at putting out small containable fires, but you have to be able to have the right kind of extinguisher for the type of fire you're trying to fight. You have to be trained in knowing how to use a fire extinguisher and to assess in a fire situation if you have the right type of skill set, the right fire extinguisher, making sure that as you put the fire out, you'd be able to still get to the exit. If you use a fire extinguisher incorrectly, you can actually spread the fire and make it worse. So we really don't focus on extinguishers because, again, they can be really highly effective tools at putting out fires in very specific situations, again, with the right training and the right extinguisher for the right type of fire. Mm. But because there's a lot to consider in a situation that you probably aren't dealing with very often or ever,
sure,
the best thing to do is to get out quickly, safely, and then call the fire department once you're outside.
Right. Well, that being said, and I'm glad you mentioned fire departments because, you know, we talk a lot about community policing and getting to know your cop. We have police, professionally trained police and law enforcement in our schools, but it's also really important to get to know your local or community fire company, because especially now during Fire Prevention Week here in Connecticut, a lot of companies, especially the volunteer companies, are going all out. Obviously, they're going to schools and doing talks and training, but they're also having open houses and community events where they're in some cases giving away smoke alarms and carbon monoxide detectors, and they're doing things like training people how to get out of fires. Some even have simulators with non-toxic smoke where they're teaching people how to get out of a fire and how to get down low under the smoke. And they're training people on how to use various types of fire extinguishers and trying to reinforce the importance of each type of fire extinguisher. So, you know, as a first line of defense, if you know how to use it, it's good to hear from someone from the National Fire Protection Association that, you know, in certain strategic situations and with the right knowledge and training, that can also be a valuable tool to reduce damage and save lives.
Right. Well, I think you bring up a really good point about fire departments and first responders really looking to connect with the community and better educate them. They are the core of our Fire Prevention Week campaign because as much as we try and get the message out from where we are, we really rely so much on fire departments to get that message out in their communities, and they do such an amazing job every year, like you said, doing open houses, going into schools, all sorts of events, working so hard to really better educate kids and their families about ways to stay safer from fire. So it's really, we look to them to really make the campaign a success each year.
Great. Well, as you were talking about getting out in that critical couple of moments that you have between the time a smoke alarm sounds and it may be too late, involves planning for escapes. So can you talk us through a little bit about the most important few things folks should know about escaping a home when there is a fire?
Sure. So everyone in your household should be involved in developing a plan. This way you know that everyone is equally prepared and ready. And they're very basic things to do. They sound so simple, but they can make the difference between life and death in a fire situation. So the first thing you want to do is make sure that you are have identified two exits in every room of your home. So it's typically a door and a window, and you want to make sure they're in good working order. Can the windows open and shut easily? Is there anything blocking any of the windows or the doors or clutter around? Make sure that all that stuff is cleared away. Sometimes people will block a window, you know, with furniture of some sort or even maybe a door depending on the type of house you live in. You want to make sure that all those exits are clear so that people can exit them quickly if needed. Another thing you want to do is make sure that you know the path from each of those exits to the outside. How will you get from each room that you're in to the outside? And then once you know how to get outside, where are you going to meet? You want to pick a meeting place outside in front of your home, something that won't move or change, you know, something like the end of your driveway or a tree or a mailbox or a lamppost. Those are good meeting places. And then this way, once you're outside, you need to know to either, if someone can grab their cell phone on the way out, that's great. If you need to go to a neighbor's phone, call the fire department immediately. Let them know that you're outside. If there's someone who's not accounted for, let them know that they're still inside. But these are all things that you all need to plan for. Specifically, if you have, you know, young children, or very young children who need assistance, who's going to be responsible for getting each of them? Who will be responsible maybe for an older adult in the home who might need additional assistance? You really have to consider for all those factors and age groups, and that as your circumstances change, you need to change that plan accordingly.
And every year during October and Fire Prevention Week is a great time to revisit that plan. You can kind of make a little family or household exercise out of it.
Exactly. That's why this is such a nice campaign, because it's just such a great way of reminding people that there are those simple kinds of things you can do and that this is a great time to do it.
Right. Well, another thing that you mentioned, we take for granted that we dial 911 and call the fire department, but there's another critical person in that chain of communication, and that is the emergency dispatcher. And here in Connecticut, as is the case in most of the country, there are uniform protocols that these dispatchers have. So I'd really like you, Susan, to talk for just a couple of minutes about the critical importance it is to listen to and try, as much as you might be in a panicked state or in shock because you just escaped a fire in your house, it's critically important that dispatcher gets the necessary information that they need to get you the help that you need.
Right. And, you know, you bring up a really great point that I didn't talk about. But once you're outside, you know, once you've escaped safely in a fire situation, you need to stay outside. So the first responders, they're trained, they're dressed properly to go inside a burning building if needed. So if you need to tell them to get that there's someone inside or they have to approach the home in any way, they're equipped to do it. You're not. So the best thing to do is give them the information they need so that they can do their jobs as safely and quickly and efficiently as possible. But one of the other things that's really important, too, is to make sure that you have the number of your home clearly marked, because sometimes, particularly in rural areas of the country, it's hard for fire departments to locate the home if it's not easily identifiable, unless there's obviously a flaming fire. But sometimes if you can't see from the outside that there's an issue, it's really important to mark your home clearly so that fire departments don't waste precious time trying to find you.
Very good. Now let's talk about prevention in terms of hazards and the most common fire hazards that are in one's home. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes left with you, Susan McKelvey. So let's leave you with some important advice to everyone listening about the most important ways that they can prevent a fire.
Sure. So some of the most basic ways you can really reduce the risk of fire are looking at the areas where they're most likely to occur. So cooking is a leading cause of home fires in the U.S. So just about half of all home fires are started by cooking and cooking equipment. So the leading cause of cooking fires is unattended cooking. So stay with the stuff that you're cooking. You know, no matter what you're doing, stay in the kitchen, keep a close eye on it. And make sure that the area is clear of clutter, you know, move oven mitts, towels, anything that can burn well away from the cooking area. So that's one area you can focus on. Again, just by taking some simple safety precautions, you can greatly reduce the risk of having a cooking fire. Heating is the second leading cause of fire, so that's another really big area where you want to make sure that your heating systems are inspected before the start of the heating season, and that they're cleaned if needed. Portable space heaters are a large cause of home fires, so you want to make sure if you do use them that you use them properly, again, keeping them away from anything that can burn. I would say in a nutshell, those are the two areas you can really make a big difference in reducing the risk of having a fire. Of course, in terms of electrical fires are a leading cause of fires in the home, so make sure you don't plug more than one plug into a receptacle. Turn off appliances when you're not using them and unplug them. There's just these simple kind of steps people can take that can really make a great difference in reducing the risk of fire.
Yeah, we've seen a few really devastating fires here in Connecticut just because at holiday time, people didn't want a tripping hazard, so they ended up putting their extension cords underneath carpets and things like that, which I imagine is not just a Connecticut-centric risk.
No, everywhere you go, obviously, you want to make sure that you use all your wiring very safely. Really best not to use extension cords if you can avoid them. If you are going to use them, certainly you never want to tuck them underneath any kind of carpeting. You want to make sure that they're free, clear, everyone can see them easily. And you want to make sure they're in good working order. If there's any kind of frays or anything that's in disrepair, it's time to get new equipment.
Right. Yep. New and Underwriters Laboratory listed extension cords. Better to play.
Yeah. Well, any independent testing laboratory like UL is great. And again, you also want to follow the manufacturer's instructions. So that's really important when using any kind of lighting equipment.
Lighting and wires. Good. Well, we want to thank you. Susan McKelvey is with the National Fire Protection Association. This organization's been around since 1896 as a global nonprofit devoted to eliminating death, injury, property, and economic loss due to fire, electrical, and related hazards. Today is the first day of Fire Prevention Week, and if you want to find out more about the National Fire Protection Organization, you can go to their website, the nfpa.org, or if you want to learn more about some tips to keep yourself and your home safe and review a lot of the information that we've talked about this morning, you can just go to firepreventionweek.org. Susan, great to make your acquaintance, and thank you so much for this important and potentially life-saving information here on day one of Fire Prevention Week. Thanks for being on the show. So you've heard the program. We've visited Stepping Stones Museum for Children down in Norwalk and had guests representing activities going on there several times on the show. Today is no different. The Stepping Stones Museum for Children is teaming up with Fairfield-based Sustain.com to present a Sustainable Living Expo, and it's coming up on October 13th. So we want to invite all the folks listening out to it, no matter where you are in Connecticut. If you're out on Long Island, come on over. Anywhere you might be listening within driving distance, it's going to be a great family-friendly event that introduces you to small local businesses and organizations that provide communities with exciting or innovative sustainable products and services and zero waste solutions. And on the line today, we've got the person that started this whole thing, Annalisa Paik of Sustain, and she's going to talk to us about the upcoming expo and her business's mission to unite, nurture, and grow a community that's dedicated to sustainable living. And I dare say the entire state can take a lesson from the program today. Hopefully you'll be able to come out to the expo, but if you can't, stay around because you're going to get some valuable information no matter what. So Annalisa, thank you so much. Tell us how you came to discover Sustain.com.
Good morning, John, and thank you so much for having me on the show. I started a blog called The Fairfield Green Foods Guide back in 2009 when I knew that people were starting to get interested in local food. They just couldn't find the resources. Same thing with sustain. I know people want to live more sustainably. We're all concerned about the extreme weather events we're happening. We're very concerned about atmospheric carbon dioxide measuring over 400 parts per million in 2017, the highest concentration in over 800,000 years. As we continue to have more and more extreme weather events like those crazy torrential rain we had last week with the flooding, very dangerous. People become more and more aware that we do need to start making different choices. We need to move away from a disposable economy to a circular economy, and we're going to show people how to do that in really exciting ways here. So sustain is a free resource for everyone to go to find ways to live a more sustainable lifestyle. And what I mean by sustainable is living and conducting business in a way that ensures our needs are met without compromising the needs of future generations. And the good news is we can do that. So come to the expo and meet the businesses that are making the products and providing the services that help us reuse, repurpose, upcycle, go zero waste, go zero emissions. Everything from local and organic food to green homes, zero emissions lawn care, environmental art, sustainable apparel, non-toxic personal care products, electric vehicles, and even socially responsible investing. The big calls to action that we have this day are for people to gather up their used textiles for recycling. Used textiles comprise almost 6% of our household waste. So this is the waste that's being carted away and our municipalities need to manage for us. It's being incinerated. We have 5 waste-to-energy plants in the state of Connecticut, so it's being burned. So we have all been trained to take our best used clothing and donate them to Goodwill, and everything else goes in the garbage. We need to change that thought process. That is not a circular economy. That is, you know, an economy where we make, use, dispose. So they all have value.
Right. I was going to say it's a circular economy, but that doesn't mean that we're supposed to use the circular file to be throwing away our clothes that we don't want.
Absolutely. And again, we need to just kind of change our culture. So this event is meant to inspire people to take action that day, feel really great about it. So gather up all your used textiles. This isn't just clothing. So it's your footwear, including your blown-out flip-flops.
Yeah, old towels and
even stuffed animals,
bedding,
pillows, small throw rugs.
Sure.
All that stuff. It can all be recycled. And many of these items are actually repaired and resold in other countries. So they create jobs. And when they're not, they're either made into rags or they're recycled into new products like insulation and stuffing. So they all have value.
Right,
so we
can
get all that stuff out of our waste stream. Wow, there's zero waste hero. So we have opportunities for people to dump their used textiles at the Bay State Textiles recycling truck and then go inside and take a selfie with as a zero waste hero. So we want people to feel really good about taking sustainable actions.
Excellent. Well, if the thing I think we should insert right now is that if folks were listening to your introductory remarks and they're on the internet looking up sustain.com and they're like, wait a minute, this doesn't look like a Fairfield-based sustainability website. They just might be spelling it wrong. So it's important for folks to know that if they're looking for your website and information on this great event, of course, they can go to the Stepping Stones Museum for Children's website and click on the events link to this event. But to learn more and to find out more about all of your partners, they need to go to your website, which is sustainne.com. You spell it with the sort of the French twist there, the sustain.com, sustainne. So folks, if you're following along at home, make sure you're going to the right website. Was there any particular inspiration behind the slight modification of the word sustain, Annalisa?
Oh, absolutely. Well, first of all, having a unique name allows you to trademark it.
Mm-hmm.
And the extra N-E at the end, again, it's just like a French, you would add an N-D at the end. It actually stands for a new economy. So it's that economy I was talking about where it's not just make, use, throw away. That's the disposable economy. It's a circular economy. So we really are starting to make very dramatic changes, very necessary shift away from our wasteful ways into a renewable economy. We've seen that with the whole zero waste movement. We see it with plastic straws. We see it with plastic bags. So single-use plastic bags, single-use straws, single-use plastic bottled water, those are all going to be going away. And actually at our event, one of our sponsors, Grade A ShopRite, is going to be giving away reusable shopping bags so people can shop at the event with a reusable bag and start practicing that behavior that day. Keep the bag, put it in your car, and the next time you go to the store, any store, it doesn't have to be the grocery store. I'm not going to name the name, but a major drug retailer gives a plastic bag, even if you buy a little tiny item. We have to stop that. That's crazy. That's just not sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And so this event is a really exciting way for people to start finding better choices that have a lower impact on the earth. I just want to say that, you know, when people think about garbage, think about, oh, yeah, I just take my garbage and throw it out in the garbage pail and it's not my problem anymore. Well, actually, this is a huge problem. We in the United States of America used to send our plastic and our paper to China for recycling, and that ended in January. So our municipalities are struggling to find solutions to manage municipal waste, the waste that's produced by our households. The costs are just soaring. We may see new schemes implemented, pay-as-you-throw, which is volume-based pricing. Mm. So, for example, I'm a zero food waste household. I have curbside compost come, one of my members, and they pick up my food scraps.
Mm-hmm.
So my waste is small. I only have half a bin, but my neighbors have two large garbage bins that are overflowing with garbage. We both pay the same price to have our garbage hauled.
But maybe not forever.
Maybe not forever, because, again, if we don't start solving these problems ourselves, our municipality is going to have to come and say, hey, this is unsustainable. We can't afford to continue managing your waste at this low price. So
right.
I think it's easier for us to take the waste out of the waste stream.
Right.
And the food portion of it that I was talking about, 20 to 25%, it's huge. It is heavy. It is the largest component. And it's being burned. And when you burn wet things, it is very inefficient. So
mm-hmm.
having the food waste in there is not only expensive to haul and inefficient to burn, but again, if you go back to the thought of the circular economy, we can take that waste and have it sent to an industrial composting farm where it's going to be used to enrich the soil on our local farms who need to feed us.
Excellent. Well, if folks want to learn a lot more about this and learn a lot more about some of the cool exhibitors and exhibits that are going to be happening on October 13th at this Sustainable Living Expo at the Stepping Stones Museum for Children, stick around after the break and we're going to run down a few of the specific exhibits that you might be interested in. But we also want to remind you that proceeds from the expo are going to support the museum's Open Arms Initiative, which provides thousands of children, caregivers, and teachers every year the opportunity to enjoy the museum regardless of financial, language, cultural, or special needs barriers. So this is just so good in so many ways, and we're going to come back and key in on a few of the particular exhibits and exhibitors for this sustainable expo that's coming up, Sustainable Living Expo at the Stepping Stones Museum with Annalisa Paik of sustain.com. That's sustaine.com. We'll be back with Annalisa right after this break. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Boquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. If you're seeking information on how to plan for future long-term care costs, you'll want to attend the public forum, The Missing Link in Retirement Planning, Why and When to Consider Long-Term Care Insurance. This forum is coming up on October 11th at the Darien Library. The program starts at 6 and doors open at 5:30. The state of Connecticut, in conjunction with the Darien Library, is presenting this free two-hour session that's open to the general public. And this is important. No insurance sales are going to take place at the forum, but you will benefit if you're between the ages of 40 and 65 years of age and have or plan to have assets of at least $75,000, excluding your car and home at retirement. To register for the program, please call 800-547-3443, or you can just register online at ctpartnership.org and click on the public forum link. Well, thanks for sticking with us. We're hoping that everybody within the sound of our voice is saving the date of October 13th to head down to the Stepping Stones Museum for Children in Norwalk to attend the Sustainable Living Expo, which is hosted by our guest on the line this morning, Anna Leza Paik of sustain.com. That's sustaine.com. You can go to her website to dig a little deeper into some of the subjects that we've already talked about and will talk about over the course of the next 7 or 8 minutes. But we would love to see you at the Sustainable Living Expo on October 13th at the Stepping Stones Museum for Children. So we talked a little bit about how folks can bring all of their unwanted textiles for recycling there. But a couple of the other really exciting things, Annalisa, that you're bringing in is this electric vehicles showcase. And I love the fact that you've identified this range anxiety that a lot of people kind of perceive that they would have if they had an electric vehicle. You run out of gas and you take the gas can over to the gas station and get some right. and fill it back up. But when you're in an electric car, it's not so easy. Tell us about some things that people need to know about electric vehicles.
So I have a Nissan Leaf. I've been driving it for 2 years. I was nervous, actually, at first, but I am amazed at how many public charging stations there are. There are over 400 in Connecticut. Mm. So, for example, I can go shopping at Whole Foods and plug in my car and charge it while I'm in there shopping. I went to a meeting in Ridgefield to visit one of a Sustain member up there who recycles clothing. And I plugged in to a charging station 2 blocks away and walked to my meeting. It's a beautiful thing to be able to do that. And people are always amazed. Every time I plug in my car, I have someone walking by saying, how does that work? How do you do that? And so people are really intrigued. So we are a range confident state. There are many private charging stations as well at businesses, which is really wonderful. Some of the larger corporate campuses have multiple charging stations there for their employees that drive electric vehicles. There's also a lot of incentives, both at the state and federal level, to save on your taxes. So we've got at least 5 vehicles there. We've got 2 electric vehicles coming from Eugene's Green Garage in Black Rock. Then we've got a Bolt and a Volt. So the Bolt is an electric vehicle. The Volt is a plug-in hybrid from our sponsor, Carl Chevrolet of New Canaan. And then my Leaf is going to be in the showcase. So people can really have a nice idea of the variety of vehicles out there and ask any question they want. And there are no dumb questions. It's, hey, let's demystify driving an electric vehicle because we really need to stop burning fossil fuels. Mm. And driving an electric vehicle is one of the best things to do it. I have a 19-year-old, and when he started driving, I let him drive my car once, and he said, can I just drive your car all the time? Hmm. He loved it because it had instant torque.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the other thing is that we've got to stop burning fossil fuel, but we all need to keep eating, and if we don't have the food growing that we can turn into the food we eat, then we're in trouble. And one of the ways that we can make sure we sustain our food supply is by sustaining pollinators. And that's where the Best Bees Company comes in. Tell us about them.
Right. So the Best Bees Company provides a turnkey service so that people can have beehives in their yard maintained by someone else and have someone else harvest the honey as well. So at the expo, they're going to be doing a demonstration of how to extract honey from a frame. So the frames all sit inside the beehive. And they're also going to be giving away free pollinator-friendly flower seeds so we can all create better habitat and food source for our important pollinators. And we have many pollinators. It's not just the honeybees which were introduced. We have native pollinators that are very important for us as well. So that's going to be very fun. So that the demonstration is going to happen on the stage in the celebration courtyard. And that's the same place where we're going to be doing a build of a scale model of the museum, or many of them, using recycled cardboard and 3D printed connectors from our member 3Dux Design. And the Junk Luggers is bringing in the cardboard, or people can bring in their own single ply cardboard. So that teaches kids how to repurpose and how to upcycle.
Yeah, I think people should like get all of their textiles and put it in a big cardboard box, bring them to the museum, dump their textiles out front, then bring their cardboard box inside for this imagining display, and everything goes to a good place.
Oh, absolutely. And nothing is going to go to waste. If there's any cardboard left over, the Junk Luggers is going to take it on their truck, and they recycle everything. Again, they have a goal of going zero waste by 2024. And I love your idea. Thank you for asking people to put the clothing and textiles in a cardboard bag, the plastic bags. If you bring anything in a plastic bag, we're going to open it up, empty it out, and give you the plastic bag back to reuse.
There you go. You go to the Sustainable Living Expo. You recycle everything.
Yes. Exactly.
And maybe you'll even drive home with a business card in your pocket to go and buy an electric vehicle. Who knows, right?
That would be wonderful. Yeah, and then you take a selfie. I'm a zero emissions hero.
Yeah.
You know, we are really excited about this opportunity to present people with really exciting options for taking a lower impact lifestyle, right? To the next level.
Yeah.
I think we're all doing some things. Our culture is already changing, but these businesses are doing really amazing things. Imagine zero emissions on your car, zero emissions on your lawn care, getting rid of your food waste and getting rid of your textile waste. We don't need any government mandates to do that. We can just make those choices on our own, and they're really fun choices to make.
Well, I think if people know about the Stepping Stones Museum, they know that they serve food in their Healthyville Cafe. And on Expo Day, the menu is going to feature local in-season menu items sourced from local farms, including butternut squash soup, chili with cornbread, and homemade butternut squash ravioli. But there's also going to be some other folks there talking about sustainable and locally grown and organic food, right?
Yeah, we have the Hickories, which is a USDA-certified organic farm in Richfield that's going to be coming down. They also have sheep that they shear and have the wool spun into fibers that they make beautiful woolens from. And again, as we look at a zero-waste economy, we need to look at durable items, things that are long-lived. And these are the things that your grandmother would have saved and handed down to the next generation because they were so precious. Those are the types of goods that the Hickories is going to be selling, along with their specialty foods. So they have jams and sauces, as well as seasonal vegetables. They're also a flower farm, so they're going to be selling bouquets. Then we have two different businesses that are providing sustainable coffee. One is a local roaster. That Shearwater coffee bar that they locally roast in Trumbull and then sell in bags, organic fair trade coffee. And it's also available in their store in Fairfield where you can get a cup of coffee. And then the other one is Winfield Street Deli, and they sell Counterculture coffee, which again is a sustainable brand of coffee. So people can come get a sample if you like it, buy a cup, buy a bag, and start changing your behavior, because what's good for people is also good for the planet. So if you're going to have a good, healthy cup of coffee that is also good for the planet, that's an important step to take. And that's something we do every day, multiple times a day for some of us.
There you go. Well, folks, we're out of time with Annalisa Paik of Sustain.com, but we want to make sure that you understand, if you were going to the Stepping Stones Museum, your admission would be $15 per person and $10 for seniors. But if you go on the date of the Sustainable Living Expo on October 13th, that same admission gets you all of the Sustainable Living Expo resources, information, exhibitors, and activities absolutely free. Also, if you're bringing the tiny little ones, children age one and under are free. And if you'd like to find out more about the great work that Annalisa and her partners far and wide are doing to help make our environment and the place we live better, you can go to their website, sustain.com. That's sustainne.com, or visit steppingstonesmuseum.org for information on all of the great activities, because the Sustainable Living Expo is just one of hundreds and hundreds of different things that the Stepping Stones Museum does for children of all ages and all of us to learn more about the world we live in and making it better, just like Annalisa Paik and all her partners will be doing at the Sustainable Living Expo. So Annalisa, great to make your acquaintance. Thank you so much for being on the show this morning. And we'll see you on October 13th at the Stepping Stones Museum for Children and the Sustainable Living Expo. Well, as we said in our introduction, our final segment this morning, we're going to go out to Colorado Springs on the phone and meet Ed Grahalski. He is the Senior VP of Brand for Junior Achievement USA. Junior Achievement is an organization that we have been very close with here, at least in regards to the work they're doing in Connecticut. For most of my 28 plus years here on the program, we check in with them often. This is the first time we've had the opportunity to talk to someone at the national level, but it is quite important. New 2018 research that was conducted on behalf of Junior Achievement and overseen by Ed and the folks at Ernst & Young illustrates how in just a year after first being surveyed, high school age teens' career ambitions have shifted further away from careers in STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, and the arts, and how more 13 to 17 year old students are expecting to take out loans to help pay for college. So Ed, thanks for joining us on the program. Tell us a little bit about yourself and why this was something that was particularly important to Junior Achievement.
Well, thanks for having me, John. Yeah, in terms of Junior Achievement, folks may have heard of our organization. We reach nearly 5 million young people a year with programs that really focus on financial literacy, entrepreneurship, and work readiness. And so obviously when you think about work readiness and career readiness, the whole STEM component is critically important because, you know, as most studies and most folks will tell you, particularly employers, more and more jobs are going to require STEM skills in the coming year. So we really wanted to gain an understanding of where teens' mindset is right now related to STEM careers.
And where does the issue tied to taking out loans play a role? Does it have something to do with the fact that a lot of organizations that would employ these STEM graduates are helping to pay for college, and the move away from interests in STEM careers is going to push these students into taking out loans to pursue other interests where they might enjoy some degree, if not a really comprehensive degree of educational underwriting from future employers?
Well, I mean, and there may be a little bit of a disconnect regarding the paying for college. One thing that we did see in the survey is that even though there was a decline, especially among teen boys, in terms of interest in STEM careers, there seems to be an understanding that some sort of technical proficiency or skill set is going to be required whether or not they end up in a STEM field. And so from the perception of teens, they're probably looking that college is definitely going to be a requirement. But, you know, as we know, and this even applies to STEM, that's not always the case. You can actually look at alternative pathways, like going to a two-year community college or, you know, doing some kind of a career and technical training. And so a lot of that may just be a misperception on their part in terms of how they would need to pay for that higher education.
I see. And then the component of careers in the arts was also a piece of this study.
Yeah, so in terms of the arts piece, you know, when you talk about STEM, there's also a growing emphasis on what they call STEAM, where they include arts as part of the STEM component. And really what's happening is you're seeing more and more of a merger now of the arts into the STEM area, because design thinking, and a design approach are really integral to, you know, the STEM space. So if you're looking at engineering, chances are you're going to be working on a CAD, some sort of computer-assisted design element. So design thinking is really becoming a very basic component of what's happening in STEM. Computer sciences is the same way. If you're going to be a programmer, you're going to need kind of that. You may, you know, benefit from that creative, artistic type approach when you think about how you're going to develop something. So there is more of a connection now with art and STEM. And so that again, is a bit disappointing that we're seeing teens, you know, kind of moving away from that art space as well.
Mm. So when we're looking at this kind of three-headed set of data, the drop in the interest of boys in STEM careers, the level, essentially the flat status in regards to girls, and then careers in the arts and concerns about teens expecting to take out more student loans. You know, how do those three, you know, come together and make somebody like you interested in going out and surveying and actually pinning down, you know, a little bit more tightly the statistics that the study ended up revealing?
Yeah, well, so, you know, as a nation right now, we have about, I think, $1.3 trillion in outstanding student loan debt. And at the same time, employers are saying that they're not getting the folks they need with the skill set they need to do the jobs they need today and into the future. And so obviously there is a disconnect. We have so many young people going out there, going to college, spending money on degrees, but at the same time employers are saying, this is great, but what you're learning isn't necessarily aligning with what we need from an employment standpoint. So that's why it's critically important to get teens thinking in terms of what are some of those opportunities that are out there, such as careers in the STEM space, because that's really where the future of work is going. And so it's really important that if you're going to take on the investment of higher ed, that in the end you're going to be able to find a way to help pay that back, you know, with a job that pays you back with what you need to make.
Mm. I also see here that you're looking at careers that have risen in popularity, and they include the medical and dental fields as well as public service. And this is kind of interesting because you keep hearing that you'll never go wrong if you go into a medical related field, because America's population is aging. There's that bubble of aging that we're in right now that's going to yield a much higher population of folks who will be needing medical related services. So there's almost a natural, logical presupposition that there's always going to be work there. But at the same time, we're hearing literally the same thing. I mean, right here in Connecticut, our manufacturers are screaming for jobs. We have a number of really, really high-end, you know, military and 21st century manufacturing organizations and companies here in Connecticut. 2,000 to 3,000 jobs going unfilled. Good paying, good benefited, lifelong career jobs, many of which involve STEM. So it's really, really interesting that we're hearing, well, America's going to need more people in the medical profession because the population needing those services is growing steadily, if not aggressively. And at the same time, we're hearing people, there's 3,000 jobs going unfilled in the STEM fields. What is it that is making teenagers reach that fork in the road and are predominantly taking the medical end of things versus the STEM end of things?
So one of the things that we found from the survey, and this was especially the case for the girls that participated, was that one of the big motivators for them is getting into a career where they feel like they're helping people. And that certainly would explain why you're seeing the interest in medical or things like, you know, becoming an educator or a first responder, some of the careers that they did highlight that they were interested in. And I think from a positioning standpoint, from a society standpoint, when it comes to positioning STEM, we don't necessarily talk about how STEM careers benefit people. We talk a lot about, you know, there's a great demand for these jobs, you know, they pay well, but we don't necessarily get into, you know, if you become an engineer, this is how it ultimately is going to help a community because they now have, you know, maybe they have a drinking system now with fresh water, or they have a bridge that was critical to help the community, or you're able to help build schools, or, you know, there's just a whole myriad of things that even, you know, in the computer sciences where you're actually
building,
we don't talk about that. Yeah.
I was going to say building the hospital and creating the equipment that all the medical people are using.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. Yeah, and that's an example. So we don't really talk about those careers that way. You know, that's not necessarily where the kids are at. The other thing too is, and this was true for both the boys and girls, they really want to pursue a career that they feel they would be good at. And obviously, if you're in high school and you're struggling with math or science, a lot of the times it's because you're not making the connection of how you're going to apply this later in life. It becomes a disincentive. And so one of the things that we really feel needs to be focused on is you know, getting kids excited about STEM careers like robotics and rocketry and computer sciences, you know, coding, those are great, but it's how do we keep working with them to make sure that they feel confident that they are good with the STEM skill sets, you know, that they're learning the science and math and they feel confident with it, that if they were to pursue a career, they could be successful at it. So that's another piece of it.
Yeah, we also see that parental influence is growing exponentially in terms of helping to steer their kids into jobs. And it's interesting because when I go out to manufacturing job fairs and recruitment, and I talk to people in manufacturing associations, they are always asking for the educator, the student, and the parent to be part of their audience.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, that's part what's really important. We talk to a lot of manufacturers as well as we go through, you know, developing our programs. And one of the old perceptions of manufacturing is that it was dirty and dangerous. And it's, you know, if you've been on the floor of an advanced manufacturing facility today, you know that's the furthest thing from the truth. Mm-hmm. So the idea is to get kids and their parents interested in and engaged in this. The other thing too, as you were mentioning with the parents, sometimes they hear things that you know are occupational in nature, and they say, well, I really want my child to go to college, but you can go to college and you can do these in-demand jobs that are really making a difference. And so it's really changing perceptions around industries like manufacturing.
Great. Well, in the last few minutes that we have with you, Ed, let's talk about some of the other interesting stats in this survey in regards to financial readiness and, banking education. This is another important point that JA felt needed to be surveyed and explored.
Well, you know, one of the things is, and as we're seeing with younger people, is there is a lack of familiarity with some of the financial tools and instruments that are out there, such as banking. You know, you're a young person today, they're much less likely to see them at a bank branch opening an account. A lot of it is what they're doing is through apps and through technology. And so we really want to get an idea of kind of where they are in terms of a confidence level when it comes to working with these kinds of instruments, especially when you're dealing with debt. I mean, as an example, when you talk about student loan debt, that's the second largest investment most people will make in their life, and yet, you know, these decisions are making by being made by 17 and 18 year olds who may have never actually worked with a budget and may not necessarily understand what's involved or even understand the concept of interest. And so it's really trying to gain a better understanding of where the teens are in terms of thinking about these kinds of things and the kind of information that they need that they would feel confident with. I mean, you mentioned before the importance of parents. One of the first places that teens do go to look for this information is from their parents, as much as this information is available online or you know, other resources. That's really where these conversations start. And so it's important that parents be open and willing to talk about these things with their kids as they get ready to move forward into the adult world.
Yeah, in the last minute or so that we have with you, Ed, it must have been very heartening to you once all of this data solidified to see more than 8 out of 10 teens would take a work and financial readiness class if it was available to them.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, that's very, very encouraging. The challenge is that only about 50% of them said that those were available. And, you know, across the country, there's about, I think it's about 14 states that require some sort of financial education program. You know, Junior Achievement, we wouldn't necessarily advocate making it a requirement, but it is, you know, there is an opportunity to introduce kids to these concepts in programs in their schools. And certainly, as an organization, we make those programs available to schools wherever we operate. And we just feel it's really important to get kids thinking about money, because it's better to learn it in a classroom, you know, today than 10 years down the road when they're, you know, getting into a situation where they're considering bankruptcy or something like that. It's better to get to them early and talk about it.
Very good. How can people learn more or actually review this study?
Well, they can find that information and more at ja.org, ja.org. And if they're interested in connecting with Junior Achievement locally, there's actually a map on there that will show you how to get in contact with your local Junior Achievement office.
Great. And we know we've had guests from both the Hartford region as well as Junior Achievement of Western Connecticut on the program a number of times. We've actually had the opportunity to go out to some high schools and sit in on some of these JA sessions and actually talk to the kids about what they're learning. So we're glad we're able to now talk to somebody at the main office about some of the higher level work that Junior Achievement is doing. And it's a great way to illustrate to parents and educators and young people themselves how JA is so important and relevant here in the 21st century and how it stands ready to support young people and America and its workforce in the future. JA.org is the website to go to review the survey. Ed Grahulski has been with us. He's Senior VP of Brand at Junior Achievement USA out in Colorado. Ed, thank you so much for being part of the program. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a PSA relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for airtime in writing to me via email at john.voket, that's john.voket, at connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast without permission of Connoisseur Media. Our public file reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scotts, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voket. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and important information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.